It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. This is the audio compendium, the audio sidekick, the audio Coldplay side piece to the weekly newsletter over on accessofeasy.com. You can find out all the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And my name is Joey. That is Len. Buddy, I got to tell you something. This is my first day with the Invisalign retainers.
Oh!
And my teeth are sore. I feel like there's too much saliva in my mouth. And also, I have a stopwatch running on my phone every time I take them out. So I took them out this morning to have my cup of coffee. And then my daughter wasn't awake yet, so I had a second cup of coffee before 7 a.m. Always a good idea
for me.
Oh, yeah. I'm like a caffeine junkie. You have no idea. And so anyway, I ripped my second cup of coffee. And then finally, my little one wakes up at about 7. And by that time, they've already been out for an hour. And you're supposed to wear them for 22 of the 24 hours every day. So I get up. Or once my little one gets up, I run upstairs. I make 4 eggs, protein shake. So big shaker cup full of 3% milk, another raw egg in there, scoop of protein powder. And of course, since I'm a good Bitcoiner, my creatine. And then I didn't eat again until dinner. And I got to say, while I was a little hungry around 4:30, I think this is a better way to live. The big breakfast and the big dinner and no lunch. Do you have a comment on that, sir?
Whatever floats your boat.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your support.
It's not a one-size-fits-all approach, because if you were construction, you try doing that, you'll be dead by one.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So it really depends on the type of work you do, the schedule you have. I guess in your case, how many coffees you have.
I actually didn't work out today either, Len. So that's a good control point there, right? Good control bit of data. Yeah, maybe tomorrow if I work out. I will work out tomorrow. It's Friday. See how I feel at 1 o'clock. Maybe I'll end up taking these things out. They're a pain to take out, by the way, big time. I got to get better at it. It's like there's a little bit of a trick to it to get them
worse
out.
Worse than contacts or easier than
contacts? I don't wear contacts. I have perfect vision.
Yeah. So I don't know. Contacts, you get used to doing it. And if somebody like me, I'm pretty squeamish with a lot of things. If I could do contacts pretty quickly now, I'm pretty sure over time you'll be able to be a master of this.
We'll see. You'll know because I'll be popping them out. You'll know because we sit near each other at work. You'll hear me popping the retainers out and throwing them on my desk. So there you go. Let's get to the usual stuff here. This is a big week. 6 stories. We'll start with the quote of the week from last week. People do not seem to realize that their opinion of the world is also a confession of character. That was by Ralph Waldo Emerson. And Charles is our winner. Thank you, Charles. Good guess. Good job. Well done. This week's quote, the concept of social justice has been the Trojan horse through which totalitarianism has entered. I think I know who that was by, but we'll see. If you know who it was by, make sure you put it in the comments. Don't forget, no Google searching. You can only look at the do not remove under legal penalty tag on your pillow for the answer and nowhere else. And if you don't get it there, do not cheat by looking on the web. Where do you want to start? You want to start with Mark's grappling with existential panic over AI. This is peak Mark, by the way. I've known Mark for a few years now as of you. This is peak Mark. Mark will tell you something, especially like over lunch or whatever, and you'll get to talking and he'll tell you he had an existential moment about something in the tech/finance/political world. And it's got all his attention now. And it seems that he had one recently and penned. Is this lengthy? I don't know. It's probably longer than what he usually writes by at least.
We could summarize
at least a factor of two. So
pretty quickly, yeah.
Sure.
Okay. You know, he's the aficionado with respect to AI, because he has been talking about it for some time. If you recall, Joey, we had lunch with him. I'm gonna guess 2, maybe 3 years ago when he was talking about it. Then, do you remember this lunch or no?
With I believe
some guy that was he's a fan of Monero.
Monero, yes, yeah. I do remember that. Yeah, it was dinner. So it was dinner, by the way, not lunch. But yeah.
Oh, dinner. Yeah. So I think it was Montana's or something. But
it was. Yeah.
So nonetheless, he was talking about it, and you know, he's now coming to the point that he's well, everybody knows who Mark is. He's the man behind EasyDNS. And maybe his company customers may not be actually people, but perhaps they could be actually smart computer programs like AI agents. Mm-hmm. And they could be talking to other programs out there. And it, if you're dealing like this, if there's going to be an evolution of this, because AI, it's been moving, it's been advancing at quite a clip. If this happens, if they're going to have his customers are going to be these AI programs, that's pretty darn cool. I'm not sure if it's going to get to that point, but if you are a business leader, you got to leverage AI as much as possible because it's only the best path forward to improve your business, to make it streamlined, to just make it more economical to run. So one way to make it survive is just try to incorporate as much AI as possible. But if it's going to be customers for people from Mark to deal with, this is going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I never, like, how does an AI get to buy something? How does an AI get to provide feedback on something?
Well, it's just weird because, like, without going into details on the article, you can read this yourself if you want to. I think it's you know, it's quite good. But
I'm just talking about generally, like, how does AI get to the point where it could substitute a human in terms of being a customer? In terms,
it doesn't. So I don't necessarily think that's the hang up. I think the hang up is, you know, you're building a product, and like he's, you know, talking about building out a sort of a GUI, it looks like, for EasyDNS, and
that's,
you know,
in the works.
Yeah, and but you just don't. He's saying you're just not going to need it because eventually the automated processes that he often finds himself catering to are like processes with standard operating procedures. They're not going to be human ran anymore. They're going to be automated. They're going to be, I think the word he uses is agentically carried out, which is interesting. And by the way, seeing this more and more, I think ChatGPT just rolled out a like agent hive version of their LLM. So you can task the LLM with running stuff with itself, basically. Like, you know, so you have this like team of GPT agents, you know, running stuff for you. This is a bit over my head, and maybe I'm the person that this article really is speaking to, right? Like, you either adapt to AI as a focal point of the way you do business and the way you operate, or you die. And, you know, I to be honest with you, I do use it sometimes for research because I find it easier to do research that way than to Google something and search through the links, right? That, you know, sort of old way of looking stuff up, because you can get it in the format you want and all these things. I don't know where I come down on whether or not this is an existential threat or not.
Is it Turing complete?
Yeah, you know, there's always the Turing test. At the end of the day, this is not explicitly mentioned in the article, but it's worth talking about, I think. At the end of the day, there's an interest that all parties have, okay, whether you are labor or capital, in making sure that society remains stable enough to produce both product and consumer, okay? In a world where AI becomes an existential threat to the workforce, to independent thinking, to all these things, that society fails to remain stable. And that doesn't benefit capital or labor. So I think that you're still a ways away from hitting that point anyhow. But if we did get close, I think pretty quickly you would see a lot of strange bedfellows and, you know, quote unquote, bipartisan support for just reeling it in a bit. The big question is, could you do it? I don't know, right? I don't know what AGI looks like. I don't know what any of these things look like in practice. But I think that the broader interest of all stakeholders, knowing or unknowing, is that this is not a destabilizing force. That's the one thing that kind of helps me sleep at night. Mark, maybe it'll help you sleep too, Mark. I don't know. We're due for a lunch. We can talk about this over a huge order of nachos.
Montana's.
Yeah.
Oh, it's steak, yeah. All right, yeah. Let's keep this moving.
Sure.
Because there's a number of stories, and there's one I'm not even going to pronounce. We're going to get to that one next. The next one we'll talk about. This one has not on my bingo card list, but adoption agencies.
Wild. Wild.
And I did a little bit of digging. So, well, they've been experiencing some data breaches, and there's sensitive information that they hold, no duh, about both the children and their biological and adoptive parents. So like that's a treasure trove for getting information, and it's, you know, names and addresses, but also medical history and stuff like that. So we have two different incidences that I want to bring up. Number one, we have a discovery made by Jeremiah Fowler, and there was a large amount of data to the tune of 2.5 gigabytes. And it was containing well over a million records from the Gladney Center for Adoption. And that was just this past week this was discovered. But also earlier this year, we also had a notable case from Adoptions from the Heart. That's a case, sorry, a center that's located in Pennsylvania. It's an agency. And they, earlier this year, reported a data breach. And they, at that time, didn't have a clue how many individuals were impacted. So going down this, I just never clicked in that adoption agencies would have information that people would want. But, you know, I'm just digging a little bit. It makes a lot of sense that they do it. In terms of the Adoption from the Heart one, like that was pretty nasty because they had names, social security numbers, medical data, financial records. In fact, they even had to the point where one family had to move because of exposed addresses. And there was, you know, obviously that comes along with financial strain because you have to sell the house and buy another house. There's going to be potentially a loss in terms of income, sorry, in terms of taxes and so forth. So then emotionally, psychologically, this is an impact. Kids have to switch schools. Not only are you dealing with a new parents because they've been adopted, now that, well, as soon as they think that they have new roots, well, pick it up and go to a different place. Like, it's a lot of distress that's being put on everybody out there. So like, this information is highly sensitive. And they got to do a better job at protecting it. And it's too bad that they're not. But yeah, it never clued in to me before that there was a lot of information there to be had. But makes sense.
I don't have much to say about this because I don't think there's a broader sort of security implication outside of the stuff we usually talk about. But I want to ask you. I mean, I don't know much about the adoption culture, adoption mores. But I'm curious, like, where do you often see this data after a breach, right? You see it on the dark web. We talk about this quite a bit. For sale, different data sets available for almost unbelievably cheap. You know, you and I have thought about buying a few of them, mentioned on this show over the years, you know, a couple hundred bucks for 6.8 million names and addresses or whatever from some mobile carrier or a healthcare provider in the States. If you were to leak and then have sold data related to adopted children, what is the likelihood that jilted parents or parents who are having second thoughts, you know, would look at that data and try and find their child? Like that's another risk, you know? And kids are under enough pressure these days as it is without having someone either truthfully or untruthfully, to be frank, say to them in an Instagram direct message, yeah, I found your stuff online. I'm your mother. I'm your father. I'd love to meet you, but I don't want to tell anyone about it. Like, it's just so hard for adopted kids in a lot of ways. And this is just another complicating factor. The worst part about this, I think, is that you also have CPS interactions here leaked. And so, you know, yet another sort of government agency adjacent to the system that was taken advantage of, and there's nowhere to hide. There's truly nowhere to hide. You know, as you mentioned, we've never given this particular data set any thought, and yet here we are now talking about adoption center data. It's a shame. It's a shame. Yeah, what kind of person wants this data? Like, who's hacking adoption centers? You know,
it's not who, like, an individual that would. Like, because it's, they just want to get it.
Yeah.
It's, they want to use it for sale.
And of course. Yeah.
Yeah. If you now have names, addresses, social security, you know, they get a lot of information that you could potentially do harm, financial harm to somebody. So somebody would want, there are people out there who would want to buy this. There's a cost associated with that.
Yeah.
Value. So which is, and it's the way it is. This is now 2025 and you know, it's too bad. And there's not much you could do. Like, in terms of like the adoption agency, think about all the interviews you have to go through, the tests and so forth, to just to prove that if a parent or if an individual is likely to thrive in terms of this environment. So like all the information is stored somewhere. likely in a cloud too. Like this is going into the weeds.
I don't know.
Here,
yeah, I don't know.
Right? Like it's just like what's the likelihood that they're storing it locally over there and everything is right?
Very probably low. Not. Very low.
They're using like some sort of cloud, like Drive, Google Drive, or iCloud, or whatever the heck it may be, and just waiting to be poached. Whatever. This next one, Joey, I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name. I'm just going to call it M3.0. And that M, I'm going to give it a 0 out of 5.
What?
How bad it is.
Meitan Bukis. I'm pretty sure we talked about the country of Meitan Bukis mining Bitcoin on the other show, didn't we?
Oh, did we? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I thought they were a small South American nation.
They got a heck of a soccer team.
Yeah.
So cyber criminals out there, they're evolving, right? They're always trying to find new and creative ways to trick people. And the latest target is Microsoft Teams, Joey.
Yep,
Microsoft Teams.
Yep,
it's a very popular tool for people that use it at work. And so instead of sending, you know, the old-fashioned message that has spam emails, hackers now are able to use Teams to spread this new type of software with the M3.0. I'm just going to leave it at that. And it's not just any old virus. It's a loader, right? So which means that the main job is to seek out the computer and load it into the computer and have it bring out the worst of the programs in terms of like stealing information and locking it up so that there could be some potential ransomware down the road for these people. And it's a really clever / sneaky way in which they get this done, because they often pretend to be somebody from the company's IT team, right? They reach out directly to you through Teams and they try to convince you to use a legitimate tool like Quick Assist to give them remote access, because Microsoft has that. And once they have access, they can run a hidden program and installs this program, and they're off to the races. But Microsoft Teams, it is good in terms of collaboration and all that, but there are some holes in it that should be closed, because by default, Teams external users can communicate and share files with
anybody. Sir,
and
yes,
that's
sir.
How it works here. So if you could somehow stop the sharing of external files, the stopping of external people communicating with you, looking like, oh, it looks like it's a local guy from my IT team, they got to do something about this. Teams is not a small program. It's used by a lot of organizations. I would imagine a lot of big organizations out there. Microsoft, you got to do a better job. Your software stinks as it is, but now you're just making even Teams reek as a result.
I blame the user for this, honestly. It's funny that
everybody's at fault. Everyone.
Well, I think, I don't know. Listen, the longer we do this show, the more I get this sort of feeling around which software suites and, you know, parent companies, security researchers prefer to protect and which they prefer to throw under the bus. And I don't know where I come down on this, but I'll read this from the article. Victims are carefully targeted and persuaded to execute a script that triggers the download of an archive. That was what Morphosec CTO Michael Gorelick told Hacker News. This archive contains a renamed Notepad++ updater, a slightly modified configuration XML file, and a malicious sideloaded dynamic link library representing the Meitan Bukis loader. This is just another, like, if you're answering Teams calls from numbers outside your organization and they're telling you that they're your IT department, like, that's a you problem. My personal point of view on Teams calls, if it's not in my calendar, don't call me. That's it. I'm not picking up, okay? I'm screening. I'm not afraid to admit that. I screen my Teams calls. I don't need to be on the horn with you about something that we could have talked about in an email or a Teams text chat or whatever. Everyone should have a policy around that. Companies, individuals, and ultimately, I think you're right, Len, Microsoft too. You know, external users sending files, probably in general, yeah, probably a no-no, yeah. You don't, by the way, the same Microsoft suite would almost certainly raise a red flag if you received an email with an attachment from the same address. Worth noting there.
Well, blue sky.
Blue cry, yeah, what's going on over there?
You know, I've never used it.
Well, you're definitely not going to now.
Well, Yeah, and I'm proud to have never, to be honest, I'm not much into social media. I do a lot of like, I'm a receiver more than anything. I don't really contribute. I'm a net consumer than anything else. So Blue Sky, this claims to be decentralized platform. Give me a break. They're going to be bringing in age verification for its users.
Wait a minute. Who am I sending my age verification to if it's decentralized?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Well, so this is for people that are residing in the UK. And it's a direct response to a law in the UK, the Online Safety Act. We talked about this at least two or three times in this show, at least. Yeah. And it's designed what they want to make the internet a safer place for people out there, especially for children. And now they want to put a barrier to prevent children from getting access or being shown adult-appropriate content. And so this whole new way of having user verifying their ages is a way to stop that. Blue Sky, they're partnering up with Kids Web Services, KWS. And this is a tool that is involved with Epic Games. Is that like a Steam thing? Is that like an Epic Games, like Steam or...
Epic Games, is a launcher, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So
downloader, launcher, store, yeah.
They've been through this quite a while, you know, they understand what they're doing, but still in the end, it's another centralized body is going to be storing information, because in order to verify your age, you got to provide face verification, some sort of identification, like maybe a driver's license or a health card or something. And then what are they going to do with that? Eventually they're going to get hacked as a result. And then the information that they set down, what are they going to give you? 1 year of a blue check mark on Blue Sky or whatever the equivalent is over there as a token for, sorry, we lost your data. Like, come on. So this stuff, I feel bad for the people in the UK that are going to be subjected to this. I wonder how many people are going to just try to use a VPN to get around it. But even then, what are you doing on Blue Sky? Like, what the heck? Like, it's a terrible platform to begin with.
Yeah. My big thing here, I think, is this is another way to control private conversations. I'll read from the article again. Users who opt out of verification or who are under 18 won't be excluded entirely, but will encounter stricter limitations. Access to adult-oriented material will be restricted, of course, Len. But what other features will be restricted? Don't forget, this was meant to protect kids from adult content.
They could stop it from anything if they don't like any
what else is
discussion if, being talked about. They could anything they want to define it.
Okay,
they could prevent the kid.
Okay,
from
but this
it.
Blue Sky specifically is preventing adult content, and if you don't verify, you also can't send direct messages. They want to know what you're talking about in your DMs and who's saying it. There is no other way to frame this. Okay.
But they already are able to see it. The DMs are
but
it's not like it.
But they don't know who's sending them. Now you have to have your name attached to your account if you want to send direct messages. That's the big difference. And so when people say, as I wave this coaster around, when people say this is to protect kids, okay, point them to this and say the reason that they're doing this is to protect themselves from speech they find detrimental to the regime. I've said this on this show 100 times at this point. Same as CBP. I say it over there too. Private conversations are a thorn in the side of the state in a way that they have never been before. And I think they want to know who's saying what and where. And they want to punish certain people for those views and those comments. I don't see how else you could frame this. It's obviously not about kids. No, there's no kid under 18 going on Blue Sky for prawn. Okay, it's just not happening.
You know, Blue Sky has their paid subscription too. I just took a look at it. It's $8 a month or $72 annually. So there are people out there that are paying for that, just like they pay for the check mark on X. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure exactly what sort of benefits you get from it, but on X is you get greater exposure. So there's a carrot that's dangling in front of the user to buy it. So Blue Sky, I think they have this, I would imagine, the same type of carrot that they're dangling.
Yeah.
So that's verification too. Like you're providing your credit card, even without going through this age verification stuff, people that opt in for this.
They're already verified. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's more just control of information too. Like they're able then to control what's going out there. What based on age, they could figure out what you want to see, what they want you to see, which is pretty pathetic.
Yeah.
Right.
Like I mean, this is all, it's all going to keep happening. Okay. It's going to keep happening everywhere. And so, you know, there's a freedom suite of tools that everyone should have, right? It's Noster, it's Bitcoin, it's whatever. You know, probably differs from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but the idea that you're just going to sit by and watch this happen and then find yourself trapped in the algorithm ghetto, do not want. That's all I'll say.
TikTok's another one of these companies that are, they're able to just tailor information to particular individuals, right? But in this particular story, Europe, they're putting TikTok to the grills because, let's be honest, everybody knows it's a Chinese company. ByteDance is the one that owns it. But the Irish Data Protection Commission, they are one of the leading regulators in Europe, and they launched a new inquiry into how TikTok stores the information of European users. And how is it this being done? It is being done in servers in China. And they've been fined by Europe quite a bit in the past for a variety of things, but they've obviously, they've been going out things the wrong way in terms of how they store and how they show information on all this. But with respect to this, the storage of information, initially they claimed that they did not store any of the EU data of their customers, EU users, in China. But after, I guess, enough prodding, enough asking, they decided to say, oh yeah, we do this. But it's pretty funny that they just do. We didn't mean it. Everybody had it.
Whoops, sorry.
So the mission is pretty stupid to me. But either way, they say that they're going to go ahead now and they're going to be initiating something called Project Clover. And it's going to be a data localization project where they're going to be storing information for the EU users in data centers located within Europe. Does it solve anything in the end? It's still going to be sent to the mothership, right? Because let's be honest, China, the government, if they want to query information from there, they have the ability to do so. Whatever information that it's stored in, be it facial recognition, passwords, usernames, searches, whatever, they're able to get this and use this information for potential surveillance or worse in the future. So like, this is a Trojan horse that the Chinese government has a foothold, and they're able now to manipulate people just based on what they provide in terms of the algorithm. But this, again, it's another reason why TikTok is trash, but not to say that, say, Google or anybody else is any better. Mm-hmm. I would say that it's just more the enemy we know versus the enemy we don't know. They're still both enemies. It's just they probably are going to do a little bit less damage. I'm talking about Google, but even that's not saying a lot. But here we are. They're just storing information in China, and then they were caught red-handed. It's like, oh, no, we'll fix this with this new Project Clover. Give me a break.
I would take it a step further. I would say the reason TikTok is being targeted like this in the US and in Canada is because Google, Microsoft, and others are making sure that they're targeted. They're paying for these research reports. They're paying for cybersecurity reports. They're paying for investigations. They're paying for politicians and sending, you know, all that attention TikTok and ByteDance's way as a means of providing themselves a moat. I don't think there's any question about that. I don't think that TikTok is any more nefarious than Instagram, than YouTube, than Meta, than, you know, whatever. Pick your umbrella corporation or product. These things are all rotting the minds of kids, for sure. They're all mistreating data, for sure. And Len, as you pointed out, they're all lying about it until they can't anymore. So, you know, just don't use these things is what I would say and what I would recommend. I think everyone would be best taking that advice.
All right, this last one, it's going to be a lengthy one, so bear with me because I gotta lay the groundwork. I gotta set the table here.
Sure,
it's about this Rohammer attack. And Rohammer, what the heck is it? First, you have to understand what is the data that is being stored. Essentially, it's zeros and ones, and that is being stored on computers. And so, because the Rohammer, the way it works, it's an attack, and it could repeatedly. It's kind of like slamming a book into a row of a bookshelf, right? And even if you're doing that, you only hit one row. If you just keep doing it enough, the constant shaking and all that could make one other book down the row fall out. And by doing that, essentially you're flipping the bit. Rather from being zero, it's a one, or one to zero. And this is what it's kind of doing. That's what the Rohammer thing is doing. It's just trying it to continually crash or send information out to particular data cells, memory cells, with the hope of flipping one of the bits. And by doing so, you could potentially gain access to systems, because you could then potentially get user rights or executive rights, privileges, or so forth in the system, and then work your way in there. So what this is, researchers in Toronto were checking this out. I'm not sure if you saw this. Researchers in University of Toronto, they were able to continually do this, and they were able to alter bits. And because this is impacting more so GPUs, which are used in AI, they're able to do a catastrophic brain damage situation where the results are just essentially 0% accurate, or as close to 0% accurate as possible, by continually doing this Rowhammer attack. Now, the GPUs, NVIDIA is a big one. They recommend that you should enable the ECC protections. And by doing so, this is going to be downgrading the performance of your GPU by potentially up to 10%.
Yeah.
But it could be helpful in terms of protecting yourself versus these Rowhammer attacks. Also, there are new GPUs coming out there, like the H100 or the RTX 5090s. These feature on-die ECCs. These are supposedly more resilient to Rowhammer attacks. Not totally tested, though. So it's just a theory that this is going to be more resistant, but still, it looks like there's some promising work that's coming out. All this means is that all these companies out there that have invested in these data centers that have these vast GPU farms, they're going to have to upgrade their equipment to these newer ones that may be potentially resistant. What's the cost? It's going to be millions, hundreds of millions.
Big bucks.
I don't know.
Yeah, big bucks.
Right? Somebody's going to have to eat that cost.
How about the companies, before I forget, not to cut you off, how about the companies who, you know, if you're financially literate or financially in the know, you may remember that NVIDIA ships out, it basically issues loans and also ships out more GPUs using its clients' old GPUs as collateral. Does this affect the value of the collateral? Does this affect it? Like, it's pretty wild that at the core of their business, they have this vulnerability, you know? I realize this is, you know, not exactly...
And it gets work because as they're packing in
all
these chips and everything much more closer together, the chances of flipping it increases. It's, you know what it is? It's just like a newer car. Everybody wants more and more features in cars, but also people don't want bigger cars. They're happy with the kind of the size of the cars they have now. So you're fitting in more in the same spot or potentially more in smaller spots. Something has to give. Now you try working on one of those newer cars. I know I'm going into the weeds here. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
But I remember when I grew up, my parents, I remember I had a car in the early 80s, and you could almost, like, if you were small enough, you could literally stand under the hood. There's enough space that if you're a small enough person, now it's impossible to do. So people just want more, and people are going to get more, but there's a cost for getting more. The complexity rises. The potential chances for having stuff breaks also rises as well. Mm-hmm. People just have to accept these things. This is evolution, but evolution comes at a cost.
Yeah, I agree. It is interesting, you know, the system complexity you raised there, it's a great point. And the car is a great comparison because you're right. The number of things that people are willing to part with as they increase the capability of their vehicle, their GPU, their whatever, is basically zero. And, you know, if you told somebody that to prevent the further degradation of their engine, you know, they would have to reduce the acceleration speed or the fuel economy by 10%. I don't think a lot of people would have a problem with that. On the data processing side, however, it's a much different story. These things are running. This is the new oil, right? You know, data and being able to run these huge, super powerful GPUs. Nobody wants to be downgraded. And while NVIDIA has been leader in the clubhouse for, you know, I think probably for the entire GPU sector for, I don't know, at least a decade now, between some gaps in their smile curve. That's an investment term. In their smile curve, their vertical integration, we'll call it, thanks to the China, Taiwan, America, tumultuous relationship at the moment, let's say, thanks to their, I think, peculiar financial practices and reporting. And now thanks to this, there's room to be upended here a little bit. And we talked about earlier the existential threat of AI and all these things. AI is going to do a lot. And I think one of the things it could do really well is help with product development and solving complex issues that, so far human research teams have been unable to solve, or, maybe even if they were able, the return on investment was marginal. But here, if you can make a marginal improvement and produce something better than NVIDIA, it doesn't cost you much to get it out there as a patent, probably, and also doesn't cost you much in terms of manufacturing if NVIDIA were to do it. The cost is all the consumers, like you mentioned there, the cost is all on the consumer now. And this cat and mouse game, if these vulnerabilities do exist in GPUs, the consumer expenditure on new, quote unquote, resilient units, it's never ending. There's no ceiling. So yeah, all that, I'm kind of just thinking out loud here, but all that to say, nothing is untouchable, unbreakable, and unhackable. And this is the first story we've had like this, I think, ever. It's an interesting methodology, interesting outcome, Canadian angle. It's a good story. Good little tidbit here. Yeah.
The only thing I'm hoping is through this, you're playing Call of Duty, you hope nobody tries to do this type of attack.
You get row-hammered when you're about to win the...
That's grounds for throwing the controller against the wall. So we don't
just
want
don't
that.
Say anything. Just don't say anything off color in the chat, because the UK government has your name and address. So yeah,
be aware. You notice I've been very clean today. So there you go.
That's it, everybody. Thanks for stopping in. Have a great weekend. Don't forget to sign up for the newsletter, YouTube channel, podcast, wherever you get all that stuff. We are there. And we hope that we see you next time for the latest and greatest in data reaching and overreaching. Take care of yourselves.
Take care.